Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in. I hope you had a great holiday season and are ready for a very prosperous 2018. There's nothing I can do about it, but of course there are a lot of things that John Najarian can do because he watches Wall Street for us from CNBC and the Najarian Family Office and joins us on Tuesdays to talk about what's going on Wall Street. John, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
It's great to be with you at the start of 2018, Stephen.
I am not one to give stock tips, and please don't. Anyone who would follow me would be crazy. But if I were to give a stock tip, John, it would be this: every year on December 31st, buy Weight Watchers.
Yes, that's a great. It's a great idea because if there is a more seasonal stock, I don't know what it would be.
And I see that
everybody does these.
I'm sorry, as I just said, it looks like it's up 5% today, or was early in earlier trading anyway.
Yeah, well, and today it's DJ Khaled, which is, of course, a hip-hop celebrity and music producer as well. He is a rather large individual, and he is dedicating himself to losing weight on Weight Watchers. But to your point, if you buy this stock into the final week of the year, any given year, you have done pretty well because people have the New Year's resolutions. They sign up for Weight Watchers and related programs with gyms and things like that. And you want to cash out of them generally pretty quickly in the first few weeks of the new year. But it's a lift that happens right away.
It's just predictable. It's going to happen almost every year.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's just talk about, in general, what you're expecting for this coming year. S&P 500 last year up better than 19%, the Dow better than 25%, NASDAQ 28.2. We talked before the holidays about whether if this tax plan got through that people were predicting another 10% on the Dow. What are you seeing for 2018?
I think that's a reasonable, not too fluffy of an estimate. I think 10% is a real possibility. Probably not the 19 or 20% that the S&P or Dow Jones did last year, Stephen, but I think 10 or 11%, very doable. Regulation cut, that's already manifesting itself over the past year. And then you put in the tax cut with that, and I think you're in a good position to see a lot of stocks start migrating north. And then you take in that $4 trillion that's overseas. I think the president will ultimately use the bully pulpit to coerce these boards into bringing back the money now that they can do so at 14% repatriation tax. I think that's a pretty good enticement.
Hey, you know, I'm hearing a little back noise with you, which doesn't matter at all. But it just occurred to me, last time we talked, Lawrence Kudlow was in the makeup chair sitting next to you, right? And then later that day, I heard he was in line to be, what was he in line to be? It wasn't Treasury Secretary, but his name came up again. Oh, to replace Gary Cohn.
Yeah, and it's still being tossed around as potential for that. And Mr. Kudlow is a good friend, so I can't say much more than that, except that I think he'd be a great person for that position. And I think right now I'm on the New York Stock Exchange floor, so that's the noise you're hearing in the background.
Well, let me tell you this, John. If you find out that Kudlow's got the job, and even if it's a Wednesday or Thursday or Friday, you give me a call. That's fine. We'll put you on.
I'll do it. Thank you, Stephen.
Are there any? Is there such a thing as a pot stock, a business that benefits from marijuana usage? I mean, California's up in line now, you know, and I think they're saying there'll be somewhere around $7 billion in business in the next few years. Are there marijuana-related companies that you're looking at with all of this?
There are. Most of them are too small. They're very small-cap stocks. In other words, way under $100 million in market cap. Generally, they won't let me talk about those on CNBC. One that I can talk about freely is Miracle-Gro. That one,
really?
Believe it or not, yep. Because if you take a look at when pot started being legalized and the use of that fertilizer alone, that stock has almost tripled. And it,
no kidding.
It's got nothing but runway in front of it. So I'd say Miracle-Gro and then Constellation Brands, the company that brings us liquor now has just put almost 10% investment into a marijuana liquid that they're going to be hopefully selling in the not too distant future.
Wow.
So there's a whole bunch of things going on in the space with publicly traded companies that do have decent market caps, but most of them I can't talk about.
You know, that's fascinating to me, John, because when I asked you, I thought that there might be some sort of tertiary relationship or something, but I didn't expect Miracle-Gro. But where it's legal, it still has to be commercially produced. You're saying these farmers are using Miracle-Gro to grow to fertilize their marijuana plants.
Yep, and it doesn't matter if it's in the ground or if it's in a warehouse, hydroponically right. grown. They use the product to help both strains grow more effectively.
Wow. Okay. What's this I read? An analyst, Gene Munster, saying that he says today or this year, Amazon will end up buying Target. They bought Whole Foods last year, Target this year.
They could. Target, of course, had a rough quarter. The stock fell down to about $54. Now it's made a nice jump back just in the last 30 days. Back to $67 a share. So they're not getting quite as big of a bargain as if they were accumulating it on that drop. But it is a possibility. They do need distribution points. There may be a cheaper alternative that they might consider instead. But Target is certainly, I think, a great fit for Amazon. We'll just see whether or not that ends up being an accurate prediction by Mr. Munster.
And that would be in terms of a distribution point, just like at Whole Foods, they set up a little desk where I can go out and pick up my packages.
Yep, and also because, you know, it means they don't have to build warehouses all over the country in areas where they might be able to use the existing infrastructure of Target.
All right, John Najarian on a phone line. You see him on CNBC. He joins us Tuesday afternoons on the Wintrust Business Lunch. What are you looking at today? What's got you excited?
Believe it or not, BlackBerry.
Really?
BB is the symbol. BlackBerry, yep. They just came out a week ago, said margins are going to be up to about 74% from 70%. Any kind of margin like that gets me excited. And they're in there scrambling in to buy a bunch of calls, upside bets on the stock. And there's a couple big conferences coming up. Maybe BlackBerry is going to introduce something new and exciting. And the stock is climbing today, so we bought more of it.
All right, I'm going to go buy a BlackBerry and a bottle of Miracle-Gro, John Najarian.
All right, I think you'll do well with both.
We'll talk again soon. Thanks very much. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. I appreciate you listening to Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN January 2nd as we sit here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. And I have sympathy for those of you outside today. It is brutally cold. On the phone line now is Ames Groward. He comes from the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU. Well, Ames, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I don't think we've spoken before.
No, I don't think so either, but thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, typically, I'll offer you a little sympathy because I think it's been cold in New York, but I think we're winning.
I think you do. Yeah, I was going to say the same.
There's a remarkable story when it comes to crime in New York. There's a remarkable story when it comes to crime in Chicago, really. And I want to talk to you about that in the sort of the year in numbers, but I want to start in California, because I was doing some looking about some of the things you've commented on in recent months, and one of them is this, the Rohrabacher Amendment. The Trump administration has been threatening to go after people who use medical marijuana. So there's this whole conflict between the federal government, which declares marijuana illegal, and more states, California this week, allowing the recreational sale. So when it comes to the Brennan Center for Justice, you've looked at this and looked at crime and things like that related to legalized marijuana. What have you guys found?
We tried to do just a simple plot of you know, crime rates versus when marijuana legalization efforts went into effect. And there's not really any relationship. It seems like Jeff Sessions wants to make a claim like when you legalize marijuana, crime goes up. And the data just doesn't bear that out. There doesn't seem to be any sort of relationship he wants like that. And one thing that was really funny, this is a news item that was circulated around the office, but I don't know if it got the attention it deserved or in the broader world, so I'm going to do my best now. Sessions convened a violent crime task force in February or so to study and recommend policy changes. And one of the things I think he was hoping would come out of that was a recommendation that DOJ aggressively prosecute marijuana. And some parts of the task force recommendations leaked in around August, and the task force recommended that he stay the course in marijuana and conduct further study.
Ah, really? So they looked at it
and did nothing.
Well, so then my next question was going to be, is there, and I'm sure there's not, but will there one day maybe be evidence that crime goes down with legalized marijuana?
There could be. I think it's an interesting theory. And, you know, in 1990, President Trump, then not president, actually said he thought that legalizing drugs was the way to win the drug war. He's backtracked from that. But it could be the case that if you take some of the violence out of illegitimate markets, then maybe legalization works. I think it's a tough question. I know some smart people are studying that.
This is a business show, and when it comes to the business of marijuana, they say, you know, California, next few years, there will be $7 billion added to their income. All of the U.S. marijuana legalized market to last year came to $6.6 billion. So the addition of California is huge, and, you know, it may well be a bellwether for the rest of the country. But I'm getting ahead of myself, or I'm off track, I guess I should say, because we're here to talk about crime, too. Jeff Sessions talks a lot about crime. Donald Trump signals out Chicago all of the time, and that gets a lot of attention here. The fact is the murder numbers are down pretty dramatically in Chicago, and crime overall in this country, even though we're sort of being scared into thinking it's going up, is actually going down.
That's exactly right. You couldn't say it better myself. I think there's a little, it's tempting, you know, look at the news and look at what leads the news every day is, you know, violence and bad news, but it doesn't actually square. That may lead you to think that crime is going up everywhere, and that doesn't actually square with the facts. Most of the country is safer than it's ever been. A lot of cities, Chicago among them, have dealt with some significant two-year increases in violence that I definitely don't want to trivialize.
No, but I'll do it for you. I don't want to trivialize it either, but when you look at it in an historic context, it doesn't stand out that much. In fact, even with the spike in the last couple of years, we're still a lot lower than we've been 20, 30 years ago.
Exactly right. And Chicago, you know, there are some communities that have never really seen violence decline in Chicago and across the country as much as the rest of us have. Like my neighborhood in New York is safer than it's ever been, but there are neighborhoods in New York that have never really gotten the safety they deserve, and those are important, legitimate questions to consider, how to bring safety to those neighborhoods. But I don't think that's what the president's doing or encouraging when he spreads fear.
But, you know, so the numbers did go up dramatically in Charlotte, North Carolina. They went up a lot in Baltimore. Do we know what they're doing wrong there?
It's a really tough question. So we put out a report in 2016 called What Caused the Crime Decline, and analyzing exactly that. And we ended up being able to explain about half of what we thought some of the causes might be, and they were, you know, rising income levels, rising prosperity, better data-driven policing, which I think is might be part of what's working in Chicago.
Right.
Baltimore's a poor city. Baltimore has a lot of problems internally, and those might make it harder to bring crime under control and social disorder under control. But it's a really tough question to answer.
Well, so I guess the what should come out of this is that people should pay attention to crime stories. I'm a newscaster. For most of my day, I do this, and, you know, I'm really reluctant to do almost any crime stories. I don't do very many at all because, I mean, certainly you have to do some, but I just think it sort of gives us a skewered perspective of the world we live in. There's crime, but we shouldn't be afraid to walk outside. There's no evidence that we should be afraid to walk outside.
That's exactly right. I heard a story about someone saying, you know, to a Trump rally, would you want to walk outside in New York and Brooklyn? And everyone yells, no, I live there. It's not that bad.
I love walking outside
exactly
in New York and Brooklyn. Ames Grauer from the Brennan Center for Justice. Ames, I hope we can talk again. I appreciate it very much.
Me as well. Thanks so much for your time.
There is nothing like a day.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon, Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and that is Well, it's not the theme song for Suzanne Muschamp. Suzanne is co-host of The Big Payoff. You can listen to that on WGNRadio.com and elsewhere.
I think we needed that, though, given the little Arctic freeze outside.
Right, a little South Pacific, and it all ties in because you want to talk about the movies of 1958?
I'm that kind of gal. No, what is great about the reports out of 2017 about the movies are that, and I found this shocking, the top three largest grossings, we're just talking about revenue, movies of 2017.
Yes, okay.
Were all female-led. And the last time that happened was 1958 with South Pacific, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, remember that? And Auntie Mame.
Rosalind Russell.
See how I said anti-meme? It's like, right. That's my 2018 version of it. But this is really incredible that they were all female-led. You don't seem impressed, and I don't know why.
Well, because I think it's just a real stretch. So
a stretch to, these are the numbers. I mean, it was Wonder Woman, Star Wars.
Yeah.
I mean, well, Beauty and the Beast.
Mitzi Gaynor was the lead actress on South Pacific. That's the only one I really know. And then the guy who went on to be in My Favorite Martian was on it, too. He had a...
Yeah, he was so great.
Okay, but so this year, did you give this year's?
I did. I said, so we've got...
Star Wars.
We have Wonder Woman, and we have Beauty and the Beast. And these were all women-led, meaning the
but
stars...
But I don't think they're women-led. I haven't seen any of them, so let me just speak from...
Okay, women were the primary characters in each of these movies.
Do you think Star Wars popularity had anything to do with it?
Particular one, for sure.
You think that
the whole storyline in this one, actually, people are actually talking about it because it is a very girl power theme
right.
This time around.
Okay. Well, I think I did read about that, but I'm saying they could have put up drawing paste and people go to see Star Wars. That's kind of my point.
Okay,
you know
Star Wars out of the equation.
The numbers fit your argument, but I don't know if the argument is it.
No, the argument, it's not even an argument. I think it's a fascinating point, which is that we actually, for the first time, you can't deny 58 years is a long time.
Yeah.
Right? So something is happening, and what I'd like to say is the fact that they were female had nothing to do with it. Other than the fact that in Wonder Woman in particular, I think it had everything to do with it.
So Wonder Woman clearly was female-led.
Yeah.
Well, there was a Beast in Beauty and the Beast.
Too, right, but he wasn't quite as adorable to look at as
okay,
he was
but he
the
was, did he
animated.
Share, I mean, so we could say that for the first time since Godzilla that a Beast wasn't in the top three.
You could, except for the real star of that show, Steve.
Yeah.
For most
was
women.
Was it Tea Kettle?
No. Oh, well, I actually like the wardrobe.
Okay. Oh, yeah, nice. Sure, yeah.
Wardrobe's a good one. And the candlestick.
But so in going back and doing research and pulling There's Nothing Like a Dame from South Pacific, actually listening to some of the lyrics in that song, pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah. Pretty amazing. A little edgy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A little suggestive.
And a little... it wouldn't be as acceptable today.
No, wouldn't be as
acceptable.
Even though
the language was much tamer, the implication and the adjectives.
Okay. In every way. I mean, there was gender issues, race issues, lots of stuff going on that wouldn't go on today.
Bali High, You Have to Have a Dream. See, I actually know this. I actually know South Pacific.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so let's go to the Golden Globes. They're coming up this week.
Fascinating. They're going to be on Sunday. Fascinating now that they're coming up this week. What's fascinating about them is there's a movement now that was launched and announced over the weekend with a big full-page ad in the New York Times, full-page ad in the Spanish language La Opinión, and 300 very powerful female executives are coming together to form a fund, essentially. I mean, they're putting dollars into a fund that's going to not only support women in Hollywood, but also going to support the legal, going to provide legal aid to women who are being harassed in the workplace in just regular jobs.
Because that's what people keep saying. It's like, well, it's one thing to accuse someone in the media and automatically get the attention.
What if you're a waitress? What if you work at Home Depot? I mean, all of these women. So I love that about this. But what they're going to do with the Golden Globes, which, you know, remains to be seen how this plays out. They are committing to all wear black, all the women who are part of this movement, as a way of saying, look, we've been turning on the glittering lights on the red carpet for all these years,
right,
spinning and
right.
twirling for the cameras. Let's take that out of the equation so we can really talk about
it. So are they going to be wearing cassocks?
You know, so we had this conversation at my dinner table last night, and the conversation among my kids was, look, if they were really committed,
right.
they would basically all just wear like a black, you know, sheet of some kind.
They'd dress like they were in the next season of The Handmaid's Tale.
They could, or they could have a designer design one dress for all of them and then have the proceeds that go to charity. I mean, there are a lot of things they could have done that might have rung a little more authentic. We shall see if they show up in basically all the same couture.
You know, there are women out who are like, black is their color. They'll be fine. And then others who just aren't or who are furious over this.
Totally.
All right. So, but the good thing is that they are raising this money and they are getting it out into the hinterland. Which
and on a topic you and I have talked about a lot, they are calling for 50-50 board and corporate leadership at the C-suite
level. That's part of this group.
By 2020.
That's a quota. We've talked about
it endless times. So yeah. a quota would be if it were actually legally...
Right.
You know,
right.
this is, they're saying, as an ambition, as a goal, they should strive for leadership that is gender equal.
Boy, there's so much I want to get to you. I just want to talk about the...
I know you hate the quotas so much. I know you do.
I don't really... I don't know so much, but the fact that you think people aren't going to tune in to the runway, to the pregame shows for the Golden Globes because women are going to be all dressed in black.
No, I think they will still tune in. I think the what they're trying to say by signaling that they're all wearing black is, ask me about this issue. This is what I want to talk about, not my fashion statement by whatever it is that I'm doing, you know, on the quote runway.
Right. I forgot. We have more time.
Oh, good.
So, which is great. Hoda.
Hoda.
I did not know how to pronounce her name.
You know, how do you pronounce her last name? When they call someone constantly, it's K-O-T-B.
Kotb.
Maybe it's just Cobb.
No, there was a pronouncer from, because when I did the story earlier, there was some guidance and it was Kotb.
And if they're going to call
them, call her Hoda?
Except for now they're calling them Guthrie and so we're all going to have to learn Hoda's last name, which is kind of a drag.
So two women leading
anchors on the Today Show.
Which is what's happening on CBS now, too.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's a fascinating both visual impact, I think, and also the question that I have is, will having two women versus like you and me in our banter, will it change...
A woman and a half.
a metro.
Yeah,
and me.
Right.
Will it change the banter? Will it actually change the content?
Because I don't, like, I wish this wasn't true. It's not an admission. I'm not doing it. The guy's the authority. There's always been a guy...
Perceived to be the
authority. On the set.
Taken seriously in his suit.
In his suit and tie.
Yep.
And now we're moving beyond that.
We are. The question is, are we moving beyond that or are we changing the definition of what authority means? And maybe given women are going to be in charge of the mics, maybe it is that they will be perceived as having authority.
Yeah, well,
it'll take some time.
And they were, or they are. I mean, Katie Couric certainly was when she was on the Today Show, and I'm taking nothing away from Savannah Guthrie. They're certainly capable, ultimately capable of doing that, but there always has been sort of... it's like the reverse of there's always been a cute girl, there's always been sort of an...
The guy in the suit.
Yeah, the guy in the suit.
Right.
So we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
Because it must be female. The audience must be female.
See, you and I were talking about that before the break. I would guess that as the show goes on, when it moves from... Later in the day, it moves to more women.
When the guys go to work.
Yeah, exactly. The women stay home and cook in their aprons, for sure.
But... Go ahead.
I was just going to be more practical about this issue, Steve, and just say, I do think that when two women are talking, it changes the nature of the content. And so the question is, how will that affect the overall messaging that comes off of these news shows?
Well, there is some value in banter in the differences in sexes, too.
Oh, yeah.
Just in experiences.
That's why we're such a celebrity couple.
So
hard to go out on the street.
Yeah. Gretchen Carlson, A, was a Miss America.
Oh, yeah.
B, she wants to be again.
Well, they had this huge scandal, right, where three executives...
I missed this scandal.
Oh, three executives were fired right before the holidays for really awful things they were saying about the contestants and the pageant winners. It was awful, and they were saying it on, you know, stupidly, on email, places where it was easily caught, and they were all fired.
Well,
So she's trying to actually bring back, I think, some sense of status and seriousness to this pageant, which she was a part of.
I did not know that she was a part of.
Yeah, I didn't really either. It said she won, I think, in 1989.
I think we should just get rid of those things.
I couldn't agree more. I really couldn't. Remember we had the whole conversation, which was interesting, about the woman who's running for attorney general.
Right,
who
sure.
led with I Was a Miss America contestant.
So, but it's interesting that Gretchen Carlson is in the center of all of this because she was a beauty pageant queen.
Yes.
Who then went on to become
a serious newswoman in a suit.
Who was then harassed yes. and who won that harassment. And now she's going back in defense of beauty pageant queen creating.
There's really something interesting about that because, oh my God.
I want to know what Siri's saying to you.
I don't know why Siri's going on, but there really is something interesting to be said about the fact that a woman who's really stood for feminism in a lot of ways and standing up to their rights has now gone back to one of the institutions that's perceived to be really
But not everyone believes that.
But in some circles, outdated.
Suzanne Mushin, you can check out the podcast, The Big Payoff. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you. We'll see what Siri has to say when I get back
Please
on my phone.
Please share. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It's 12:52. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. And Kelly Leonard is in the studio. He is the Second City man. He's the host of the podcast called Getting to Yes, and Andy is here to talk about that. It comes by every other Tuesday. So, Kelly, welcome back. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to
welcome
you.
Welcome to 2018.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm watching, I don't know, one of the bowls last night with my 20-year-old son, who's all into improv and does it at Miami of Ohio. And I said something to him that he took to be a little judgy, and I didn't mean to be.
You know, can't wait to hear about this.
These young men of tremendous accomplishment are on the field. The whole country's watching. I'm like, no, those guys are your age. And he goes, yeah, well, I know, you know, and he's felt kind of defensive, I think. So I said, no, I'm not saying that. I said, just imagine, wouldn't it be cool if football wasn't what got the attention, but it was improv. or whatever, you know, some other science experiments or whatever. So he got into a mock announcing of a great improv, and his commentary was, what an excellent yes and.
That's great.
Yeah, which is what we talk about in improv, and which led to this, the podcast, right?
The
podcast. Explain that for me.
Right. So, you know, all these ideas that exist in improv are really ideas that exist in life. So, for example, this week's podcast. There's a phrase in improvisation about seeing all obstacles as gifts, you know, and challenging yourself in that way. And so I purposely went and I was like, I want to pick a guest who's going to intimidate me.
Yeah.
Someone who's very different, who's had completely different experiences, very different from a white 51-year-old man who, you know, grew up in Kenilworth. And so I had on Brittany Packnett.
That's not hard to find, by the way.
No, it isn't. Well, it isn't. And I found one. And Brittany was a Ferguson protester. She's an activist. She also works for Teach for America. And she was on President Obama's task force on 21st century policing.
Okay.
This was after the Ferguson thing. And I became aware of her because of this TED talk she gave. And I want to give the quote because it says why I had her on. And this is by a person that she admires named Audre Lorde, who I had not heard of. And the quote is, those of us who have been forged in the crucibles of difference, those of us who are poor, who are lesbians, who are black, who are older, know that survival is not an academic skill. It is learning how to take our differences and make them strength.
Turn it around and make it something that makes you stronger.
Yep.
And that's something we all probably have, not to the degree that Brittany has, but something we could all sort of grow from.
We all do. We all have these issues and problems and things that we're not good at. And, you know, and it's you know, incumbent upon us, if we want to be successful, to find a way to add that into the mix and make it a strength.
You don't strike me as someone who's very easily intimidated.
Yeah, I think, but this is, I found my sore spot, right? Which is, you know, someone who is out there doing the fight.
Right.
And someone who hasn't had the advantages that I've had. You know, and it's the holiday season, right? So we're thinking a lot about our past and our family and all, you know, my family all came together and we're talking about our parents and recognizing I grew up in such incredible privilege. I mean, incredible privilege. And so it's important then for me, and I think for all of us to sort of, the world doesn't like that. And people aren't like that. So being aware that someone across from you, whether they physically look different, they might not even physically look different, they probably have a set of experiences that are very different than yours.
The experiences are different. Does she aspire to be, I don't want to say you, but does she aspire, are the aspirations the same?
I don't think so. I think, you know, she's looking for equity. She's just looking to, you know, get it on a level where she can have a shot to do what she wants to do. We're very different people, and we sort of explored that, but we share a common interest in understanding the person across from you. And I think especially today, in the world we live in, that's something that's really needed.
Do you think she was intimidated by you in any way?
No. not in the least.
But did you walk away then less intimidated by her?
Oh, yeah. And I walked away more knowledgeable. Because I had, is the thing, someone asked me today about this when I do my podcast. They go, do you read the books differently? And I'm like, I do.
What do you mean by that?
When I just read a book, I read a book.
Oh, I see. Right.
When I have to interview someone for a podcast, I underline that book. I go back and rehash it, or I do research on these people. And you come away with a much deeper knowledge when you have to read in order to kind of teach or communicate.
And it's always nice to find out that dog doesn't bite.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That you're intimidated or fearful of something, and it turns out that dog doesn't bite.
Right.
Kelly Leonard, the name of the podcast, Getting the SN. It's up today, right?
Yep, just went up.
Check it out, WGNRadio.com. See you in a couple weeks.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720.